And they have mission control, you know, from India. And most of it was in English. No problem there listening to it. And they were describing what was going on. And they had everybody there. They had the prime minister there, which is, I guess, the equivalent to our president. You know, he's there, and this is going to be a big deal. They put an orbiter into lunar orbit, almost 10 years ago. But this was a big difference, trying to land on the moon for them. And what happened was they got close. You know, they had, you know, a screen that you could look at, and they were supposed to be following this green line all the way down to the surface. Let me drop it. And you followed the spacecraft, you know, after it was separated from the orbiter, and it was right on the money. I mean, they could go one way or the other, and it was following that line exactly, according to the telemetry. And right at the very end, I sort of go off, you know, and that didn't look good. I wasn't following it, but they were standing there looking, you know, looking at the screens, and they weren't too shooken up. But sure enough, they figured out around 2.1 kilometers above the surface, they lost communications with the Falcon lander. So what happened was after time they did some evaluations, and they think what happened is maybe the center rocket didn't go off. The lander has four legs, and it has five rockets that are needed to slow it down to land on the moon. So they have the four rockets. They fire with the reverse. You know, they're going in one direction around the moon, and they turn the spacecraft to the side, and in the forward direction, that's where they fire these four rockets, and they slow themselves down from like 4,000 miles an hour down to actually zero forward direction. That was supposed to take place around 2 kilometers off the surface. So they got that far, and then those four rockets were supposed to shut off, and the center rocket was going to come on. That would bring them straight down to the surface. Unfortunately, that's where they lost the signal. So, I was trying to figure out mathematically how fast the thing must be going when it hit the surface. And that's what I suspect happened. You know, we don't know. I mean, we don't know exactly because they lost communication. But, it's 1/6 the gravity of Earth. And from that height, I come up with a couple hundred miles an hour. This thing must have hit the surface and probably wiped out the vehicle and the rover. So that's two countries that failed recently. Israel tried to do it not too long ago, back in April, and they had a lander that was coming in the same type of thing. They were going to land near the equator, and it looks to me what happened to them, that the vehicle turned 180 degrees in the wrong direction, and then the engine started firing. Something seriously went wrong with that, because they believe their vehicle hit around 500-600 miles into the surface. They think it's never stopped that forward motion. I think these people got a little further. They got to the point where the vehicle turned, you know, with the single engine facing down, and I think that's as far as they got. So I think India is going to have a Chandrayaan 3. They did it for a relatively cheap price. Everything was around $138 million, equivalent to our money. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again. They are really big into the space program. You got to remember, India now, even today, has an orbiter around Mars that's active. So they're going, you know, in a quick direction, and their goal is to put three astronauts into orbit in 2022, a couple of years from now. They don't have a space station, so I guess they're just going to go into orbit, test everything out, and probably come back. They do have a manned space program that's underway at the time. Another launch that will be coming up will be this Friday. Friday. I wrote it down over here somewhere. The HTV vehicle. Okay, no, I'm sorry. Tomorrow. Let's see. Tomorrow's Monday. Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon outside 5:30. And that will be a launch from Japan cargo vehicle going up to the International Space Station. So I talked about that last week. That one's got about 12,000 pounds worth of stuff on there, including huge lithium batteries that will replace the existing. They have metal hydride type batteries that are on the space station now. They're replacing them with these lithium batteries, and this has been going on for a couple of years. And there's going to be one more set that eventually goes up. I think about a year or so from now to complete the. Change involves using robotic arms to change out the batteries. It involves a spacewalk every time they do it. But that's the deal on that. So that's your upcoming upcoming launch. There is one toward the end of the month, and that will be another launch from Kazakhstan with a crew, one American. Mir, her name is Mir, woman astronaut, and then another guy, Oleg Skipperov from Roscosmos, from Russia, and then another one they call him a participant from the United Arab Emirates, Hazar Ali Al-Mansouri. So he's It'll be the first guy from the United Arab Emirates to go to the International Space Station. So, any questions so far with the unsuccessful landing of that one vehicle onto the moon? And the good news is their orbiter, anyway, is still operating. So now they have a good orbiter with all kinds of instruments on that. So in that respect, it was a successful flight, but the lander, it did not work out. Any comments or questions? Okay. I guess I'm going to probably have another lander. The big Bikram lander too will probably on the Chandrayaan 3 orbiter. That's my guess. Probably, maybe 5 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised if they push on that. Let's see. There's a couple of other topics I wanted to cover that had to do with something that we left out last week, and that was the Mars rover, the Mars 2020 rover that will be going to Mars next year, I think June will be launching. They have another component that is completed and now put onto the rover, and that's the helicopter. I've talked about this helicopter before. This is the one with like 4 foot long blades, dual blades. One spins one way and the other one spins counterclockwise. And has a solar panel on top to recharge it. It's all folded up. It's on the bottom of the rover. They actually had to flip the rover upside down to install this thing. And they had pictures of these workers working on the helicopter, and they installed it onto the bottom. So this way now, eventually when it comes through the entry, the EDL, entry, descent, and landing on Mars, which would be probably very early 2021. It usually takes 6 to 8 months for the vehicle to get to Mars. This thing will come down the same way that Curiosity did with this jetpack system that, well, you know, they call it a sky crane. They'll be flying overhead. The Mars rover will be lowered down on the, on these long tethers, and it's still flying on the sky crane. And this is, you know, after coming through with a heat shield and parachutes, they have this contraption there, and it worked last time. And the second the rover hits the surface with its wheels, the wheels will open up, you know, as it's coming down. It's time to cut these cables, and the sky crane will fly away, and that will leave the rover on the surface, and on the bottom will be this helicopter. So, after time, I'm sure they'll evaluate everything, make sure everything's working. You know, the mast has to deploy, you know, the weather mast and the other mast with the cameras on board and the lasers. They have these lasers that they shoot 20 feet away and they can, you know, zap rocks. Well, that will have to be deployed. But sooner or later, this helicopter will be left on the bottom. The rover will move out of the way. And then the helicopter will be able to take off and fly for, you know, 4-minute flights, and they'll start, you know, they'll go like, you know, 50, 100 feet away, and then they'll get further and further. And I think there's a plan for around 5 flights with the helicopter. But knowing JPL and NASA, you know, if it keeps going, they'll keep, you know, they'll probably fly it as long as they can. But that's how it recharges too. It'll just land and doesn't have to come back to the rover. It will have this solar panel on top of the blade, you know, and then the communications will be between the rover and the helicopter, and of course the rover will constantly be in communications with any of the orbiters that are up there right now. Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the biggest one, and then they have Mars Odyssey is still flying, and they also have, they can work with the European Space Agency, has a rover up there called the Mars Express, and the JAM, we could also use the MAVEN spacecraft, which is also put up there by NASA, that's flying around. And not to be outdone, European Space Agency will be launching a rover around the same time as our rover. And they're planning to launch from Russia. They're going to use their Proton rocket to launch their the Franklin vehicle, they call it, named after a scientist, Rosalind Franklin, who had to do something with basic DNA and all. You know, one of these scientists that they must love in the European Space Agency to name their rover after Franklin. So the Franklin rovers will not be nuclear powered like our rovers, like Curiosity or the Mars 2020. It's going to be solar paneled, solar powered, and it's not a small one, but it's not big either. It's not as big as the Curiosity, but it's bigger than our last two rovers, the Spirit and Opportunity. It does have 6 wheels with this bogey setup that all these rovers tend to have now, which is very important for their suspension, because as they drive along, you hit a rock like 1 foot high, as that one wheel goes up, because of that suspension, that active suspension, compensates by keeping the vehicle actually level. So, you know, as it goes along, no matter what happens, the rovers stay level. So they have that same suspension that has been used all the way back to when Pathfinder was riding on the moon, on Mars, and that was about 1996. And that was that small one that looked like about the size of a microwave oven. Well, after that, turned out to be a successful suspension. Everybody's making their rovers to look like ours. So that's the deal with that. Another topic I was going to cover actually last week was the atomic clock has been turned on in space. NASA back in June launched a lot of satellites, and one of them was this atomic clock, now in orbit around the Earth all by itself. And they turned it on. It's got some kind of mercury gas system to use as an oscillator. It's supposed to be more accurate than any of the GPS systems that we have. And they're testing it actually now. If it works out, my guess it probably will, they'll be able to use this on spaceships when they go a lot further away from the Earth and the Moon or anything. If you send a vehicle to Mars, for instance, you'll be able to have accurate information on board that vehicle of where you are and how far you're going, how fast you're going, and your trajectory. And right now they do that pretty much with every spacecraft. You know, you have one that might be far away, even a Voyager, and, you know, NASA will send a signal out, and it eventually hits that vehicle. They turn around, and the vehicle sends it back to Earth, and Earth can figure out the time delay, of, you know, the speed of light of the radio signal, and they can tell you, you know, like within 6 inches of where this thing is. But that won't help a crew if you're on a flight to, say, Mars or one of the moons of Saturn. You know, you're a crew, you don't want to have NASA send up a signal from Earth, you know, on a deep space network, come to your vehicle that you're sitting in, and then it turns around, sends that signal all the way back to Earth. Earth makes the evaluation, sends the signal all the way back to the vehicle again where you're sitting, and tells you where you are, and, you know, and this could take, you know, half hour, 2 hours, 10 hours, all day long, depending on where you are. You know, I mean, signals all the way to Voyager is now in 19 hours, you know, one way. You might have someday you're going to have somebody out to Saturn, which is, you know, maybe a 2 hour transmission one way. And 4 hours back, 6 hours, 6 hours to get a reading on where you are. That's not going to work out. So they have this atomic clock. It'll be on your spaceship as you're flying to Mars. You'll be able to pick up this constant signal, or you know, from Earth. The signal comes from the deep space network, and it'll hit your vehicle, and your clock will be so accurate that it's going to be timed with the clock before you left. And we'll know exactly, you know, how far away you are, how fast you're going, and what your trajectory is with a couple of measurements. So that's NASA's atomic clock. This is WSON. Any comments or questions? Okay, another vehicle I keep covering here on the net is the InSight mission. That's the one with the seismometer on board that takes readings on Mars. That all worked out good. You know, it had a robotic arm that put the seismometer on the ground and put this big cover on top of that. This way, any kind of wind which they do have wind, would not affect the instruments on the seismometer. That thing is working great. But the other thing, the heat flow physical properties package they call HP3. That setup is supposed to have a mole that pounds itself into the surface. So months ago, after this thing landed, the robotic arm picked up this mole setup, put it onto the planet, and it was supposed to start pounding itself into the ground. It might take a week, a month, you know, whatever it takes. To go down, they wanted to go down around 15 feet. Well, it didn't make it even 12 inches. You know, the idea of this whole experiment is to dig a hole deep enough and actually take readings, you know, as it goes down, of what the temperatures are underneath the surface. from that they can extrapolate, you know, into our, you know, thousands of feet or even miles into the surface. But they can't get this probe past this 12-inch distance. They're going to figure out what it was. You know, did it hit a rock or what's happening? And they thought, well, maybe the ground is too soft. The only way they can figure it out is take this cover section that actually where it came in, you know, came from. Remove the cover, take it, put it back on, you know, move it out of the way and be able to photograph the mole and see what's going on. Sure enough, they did that. They photographed the mole and they looked at the hole, and the hole was like, you know, I mean, you got to remember this is about an inch and a quarter in diameter. The hole looks like it's about 2.5 inches in diameter. And so they figured out it was pounding itself in, but it wasn't going anywhere. All it was doing was pushing itself back and forth, not going down, making a hole wider and wider. The problem with these moles, you know, we have them on Earth too. You know, different contractors use them for, you know, putting maybe cables or pipes underneath the ground. You know, the idea is to, you know, set it up and eventually, you know, it starts pounding itself, you know, either vertically or horizontally into the ground. But it needs some support. The back end of it needs to have some kind of grab to it, some kind of friction. Otherwise, it finds itself just banging, you know, maybe bouncing up and down, or just what this thing was doing was just making the hole wider, not going anywhere. So now they're working on Plan B, and right now Mars is at opposition. It's on the other side of the sun. You know, so all the different spacecraft have been not put to sleep, but, you know, they're put on hold right now. They're not doing any communications with Mars vehicles right now because of the interference with, you know, from the sun for all the radio signals. So during this time frame, they left. Usually a couple of weeks go by before they start working with the vehicles there. You know, after opposition, they'll try something else. And they're thinking about now actually taking the robotic arm and pushing, you know, pushing on top of the, you know, the mole itself. They really never wanted to do that, never planned to do that. And, you know, it could break something. It might even break the lead wire that's, you know, that it's connected to. But, you know, the idea, it pulls this wire down. It looks like battle line. That's what it reminds me of. It looks like, you know, 70 centimeter lateral line. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to put a little weight behind it from the robotic arm and hope this thing starts hammering itself in. I think once it gets down deep enough and has some earth around it, you know, the Mars around it to support it. They think it will continue on to go in the right direction. So that's the deal on the HP3, the heat flow physical properties package instrument on the InSight lander sitting on Mars. Any comments or questions? This is WS2M. Okay, I guess not. They're now looking at landing sites. When I say they Elon Musk and company, SpaceX, are looking at landing sites that have been photographed by all these Mars orbiters. And they've come up with a half a dozen or so possible sites where they plan on eventually launching their Starship vehicle to get to Mars. And he's really got plans on doing this. He flew the test vehicle, the Star Hopper, last week, and talked about that on it. And if anybody wasn't listening, you could always go over to Roy's website, roy.ac2ts.com, and look at last week, and you click on the link, and it'll show you this flight of this liquid methane rocket that SpaceX launched from Texas, a place called Boca Chica, Texas, right near Brownsville. And, you know, he's actually built the launch complex there. So this vehicle takes off, it goes about 500 feet in the air, and it translates to the left, and as you're looking at it, and it comes back down and it landed on a pad that he had a big X marked the spot. Looks like it landed right in the middle. He wants to show that he can control this just like he does with Falcon 9 rockets. And he said if it was successful, that was going to be the last flight of this Grasshopper. They tried a couple of other smaller flights with it. This is a big one. So that's what I understand. That thing's going to be retired. He's presently building two Starship vehicles. I mean, full-size vehicles. It's going to have six of these engines. The Grasshopper only had one. His goal is to launch one from Florida or from Texas. He's got building one down in Texas, building a Starship vehicle also in Florida. And I guess whichever one gets built first, he's going to test out. And his goal is, I don't know if he's going to do it at the beginning, but it's to get up around 12 and a half miles high with this thing, and then bring it back to land where it took off from. He's thinking about doing this. They said in October. I don't see how they could do this, but he's talking about October. Sometimes he's very over-optimistic, but he usually gets to do what he's talking about. Sometimes a little late, maybe months late or years late. But if it works out, Starship is going to eventually go to orbit from Earth. That will be a first. I mean, everybody's dreamt about this, actually taking one solid vehicle, launching it from Earth and putting it into orbit, and then deorbit it, have retros come on, have this thing enter the atmosphere. He's got his own heat shield on it, called Piker X, and that will, come back down without parachutes, eventually. Do a propulsion landing and hopefully come back to wherever he took off from, either Boca Chica, Texas or Cape Canaveral. And, that would be just the Starship vehicle itself. I mean, that's the one that he eventually would put like 40 people on board to go to Mars with his plan. This is a big vehicle. I mean, Grasshopper itself, that test vehicle, was 30 feet in diameter, had one engine on it, and it was around 65 feet high. This thing's going to be about twice that height. It'll still be 30 feet in diameter. And to start with this 12-mile flight he wants to do, he'll put three of these engines on, these Raptor engines, get one Raptor engine on the Grasshopper, and he'll have three on this one. The idea is to see if he can launch this up high enough and bring it back down. If that works out, he'll put a half a dozen engines on. Looks like it's going to be circular on the bottom of the vehicle. And he'll launch that to orbit. He'll have enough power to, because each engine puts out 440,000 pounds of pressure.
Paul, KD2FIU, George, question.
Very good, George. KD2FIU. Go ahead, George.
Will this vehicle be able to be powered by one engine alone? And would the three engines be a triplicity of safety?
He'll need the three engines to get himself up to 12.5 miles, or in the earlier test, probably a lot lower than that. But, it's going to be a bigger vehicle than the test Grasshopper vehicle. And it's going to go to a lot higher height. So, no, they'll be working in unison with one another. And as far as I know, they're all going to be gimbaled. So, as it comes down, you can see the engine moving. If you go to that website, Roy's website, you bring up the Grasshopper vehicle, and you see this thing as it goes up. You could see that engine, that one engine, gimbling back and forth, you know, left, right, you know, going along the X and Y axis. It's got all the senses and knows, you know, in relation to where it is in space. It wants to be pointing straight up. And this engine manages to do that, you know, similar to taking a yardstick and putting your, you know, putting it on your finger and, you know, trying to balance that yardstick, same type of thing. And it also has nitrogen thrusters near the top, you know, helping keep it balanced. You see them going off intermittently. So that's how that's going to work. And then once he gets the three engines done, he'll put the six, from what I understand, six engines on the Starship itself. Back to you, George.
Okay, you've answered it. Then it hands off to the Starship with six engines. And I guess you'll talk about that a little bit more. So I have no questions after that, and let that go. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, I'm really talking about three separate kind of vehicles. The test vehicle is the Grasshopper. That's the one that's now been terminated ever since that successful flight of a week or so ago. Now you have the Starship, which is basically the Grasshopper. You got the Starhopper, but with a crew type of vehicle on top, you know, a pointy setup. I mean, it looks like something out of the 1950s, you know, Destination Moon type of thing. You know, it's all stainless steel. So it's a nice shiny vehicle. And that's what it's going to look like. And he'll put three engines on that to start. Then he'll put six engines on it to eventually get to orbit. So that's the second vehicle, the Star Hopper vehicle and the Starship vehicle. Once that's all done, once he can prove he can get that thing to orbit all by itself, he's building something called the Super Heavy vehicle. Again, another booster that will be 30 feet in diameter. And on the bottom of this thing, he's going to put 30, it's between 30 and 35, last I heard it was 35 of these engines, same Raptor engines. So imagine that thing, 230 feet tall. And then you take that Starship with the six engines, put that on top of that. And then now you've got this vehicle that's almost 400 feet tall. You know, it's going to be as tall as the Saturn V, and Saturn V was 363 feet, and it's going to be right around that same height, but wide, you know. I think Saturn V was 27 feet, if I'm not mistaken. This is 30 feet. Saturn V had five big engines. This thing has 35 smaller engines, but they're big engines. You know, each one is 440,000 pounds of thrust. Saturn V, each engine, each of those five engines was a little over three times that amount, 1.5. Each engine was 1.5 million pounds of thrust. And that's why you had a total of a little over 7,000 pounds of thrust on the Saturn V vehicle. This thing, it's 30 engines, it's 440,000. I figured out one time, I think it was around 13 million pounds of thrust. So it's going to have a lot more thrust than the Saturn V did. Okay, so now that thing will launch, that's the Super Heavy vehicle with the 35 engines. It'll put the Starship with the six engines into orbit. And in doing that, the booster gets up to around 3,000-4,000 miles an hour. The booster will return to Earth. He plans on landing this thing on a drone ship or bringing it back to I think his biggest hope is to bring it back to Cape Canaveral. You know, it's going to be too big. But, you know, he'll have a boost back system similar to what he does with the Falcon 9 rocket, and eventually the booster itself will be able to land, and that will be reusable. Now, meanwhile, you got the Starship in orbit now going around the planet. He's got a couple of choices with that, because the Starship is going to need fuel to, cause, you know, like I said, the booster will get it up to 3,000-4,000 miles an hour. The Starship will get itself into orbit, and they'll still have a lot of fuel left, but it still will not be completely fueled. His goal eventually to get to Mars, he wants to go to the moon with this thing too, but his goal to get to Mars will be to send up another booster with his 35 engines with another vehicle on top, which won't have people, it'll just have fuel. That won't go into orbit. The fuel vehicle, the booster will eventually come back to Cape Canaveral like the first one did, but this fuel cargo type vehicle on top will dock with the passenger vehicle that the first one already put up into orbit. It'll refuel that. Now that thing now has a full load of fuel, you know, just like before it ever left Earth, except it's now in orbit. And with that, it'll be able to blast off and go to Mars with it. His goal by 2024. I mean, I still see that. He still wants to go by 2024. And then take this Starship, deorbit, go, you know, in the Mars atmosphere, land on Mars, have the people, you know, start a small colony on Mars. I don't know what they're going to do. He doesn't have that infrastructure figured out yet. And they get back on a Starship and then take off. But you might not have enough fuel. So now he's planning on building Saboteur machines to go, you know, to bring them on. Okay, the Saboteur machines are going to actually create methane on Mars. Go ahead, back to you.
Is the targeted gravitational pull of Mars part of the speed that the, I mean, once we're up to 30,000 miles per hour, is the targeted gravitational pull of Mars part of the speed that's going to accelerate it toward Mars?
Well, it'll be similar to what they do with the moon, you know. To escape Earth's orbit, you need to get up to 25,000 miles an hour. That's how you get out of the gravity well of Earth. So to get to orbit, you go 17,500 miles an hour. That's it. But you get up to 25,000, and you can break the bonds of Earth, and you're on your way to, let's say, the moon. When the Apollo astronauts, all the flights that went to that moon, either the ones that landed or the ones that didn't, they would slow down, and, you know, from this 25,000 miles an hour, Earth was still pulling on them, but they had broken free. But they were slowing down. They got down to, like, you know, mid-range between here and the moon, you know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 miles an hour. And then eventually when they got closer to the moon, they would start to pick up speed. And I think lunar orbit was around 6,000 or 7,000 miles per hour. You know, they accelerated back up to that speed as they got near the moon. Well, it's going to be the same thing with Mars, you know. They're going to break free 25,000 miles an hour to get away from Earth. And then as they head to Mars, eventually they'll slow down. And we'll, you know, I'm sure they're going to keep it a lot faster. It'll be a lot faster than the speed that when you went to the moon. It'll probably, you know, take a long time to slow it down to that speed. But eventually, yes, then they'll get caught up in the gravity well of Mars, and that will help pull them in. When you get to Mars, your entry speed is different than the entry speed on Earth. Here, if you're coming back from the moon, for instance, you know, or from Mars, and you're going to enter the atmosphere here, you need to build a heat shield that's going to withstand like 25,000 miles per hour, you're coming back really fast. Same thing with Mars. When you come back to Mars, the same thing happens. But when you go into Mars, you're going to slow down to maybe, you know, 5,000 miles an hour as you're getting to Mars halfway. And then Mars will pick you up, and you're going to start to accelerate. Before you know it, you've got to be up to 13,000 miles an hour.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. The speed leaving the Earth's gravitational pull before you reach Mars' gravitational pull. What would be the speed of the vehicle between those two points?
At Mars, it's still there, and it, you know, things get hot when they enter the Mars atmosphere. So anything that goes in has a heat shield. You know, the difference is everything that's gone in and landed so far also has parachutes. This thing doesn't have any parachutes. It's going to land propulsively on Mars. That's the goal. And once he gets things rolling, he plans on sending 40 or more people at a time to Mars. Any other questions, George, or anybody else? This is WS2N.
WS2N, KD2FIU. I'm trying to... you're explaining this very well, Paul. But once you leave the Earth's gravitational pull, before you get to Mars' gravitational pull, what do they think the calculated speed between those two points would be?
Well, you know, you leave Earth, and then Earth is always trying to pull you back. So your calculated speed is going to drop significantly. You leave at 25,000 miles an hour. You know, and before you know it, as the days go on, you're down to, you know, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 miles an hour. And now, eventually, once you get near Mars, the gravity will be even so it's a lot less than Earth. It's one third of Earth. Moon is 1/6. That gravity will start picking you up. So, you know, you might be, you know, a couple of million miles away from Mars, and you'll feel the you'll notice the speed picking up on your vehicle. And by the time you hit the atmosphere of Mars, you're now going 13,000 miles an hour. So, you know, your speed is picked up. So if you do the calculus of leaving Earth and getting to Mars, you know, you might only be doing a 40 million mile trip, roughly. That's roughly what it is. They always do it when the Earth and Mars are close to each other, which happens every almost 27 months. So that's why, for instance, this Mars thing, this land that we're sending in, European Space Agency is sending next year, if something goes wrong and they can't send it, they have to wait a little over 2 years before they can do it again. That's when everything lines up. So, you know, that's pretty much what they're looking forward to. Now that my return trip, that's what I was trying to get to before. If he doesn't have enough fuel, they'll do all the calculations, but it's, either maybe not the first trip, but maybe future trips, they're going to manufacture methane on Mars. They got that figured out. They could take the water that they believe is on Mars, and you could split it, and you can get oxygen and hydrogen. That you need oxygen to breathe. You're going to need oxygen for liquid oxygen to eventually put into your spacecraft. But it's a liquid methane vehicle, and what they're going to do, although there is some methane floating around on Mars, they know that not nearly enough for what they need. They could, with these saboteur machines, they could separate the carbon dioxide that's on Mars and take the carbon and mix it with hydrogen and in the saboteur machine, and then they could create methane. And that methane, eventually, they would cool it down and make liquid methane out of it. You'd theoretically be able to refuel your vehicles on Mars, liquid oxygen and liquid methane. And then they could blast off from there. You don't need a mothership. You can do a direct flight right back to Earth. But the problem is you'll be there for a while because, like, there's 20, roughly turnaround time, you know, you'll have to wait for that. That means you're going to have like a 6 to 8 month flight to Mars. By the way, they want to try to shorten that in the future, I guess, by putting more fuel on these vehicles. You know, Elon Musk wants to bring it from 6 months down to 4.5 months. But nevertheless, you're still going to have to live on Mars for, you know, almost 2 years. Or a year and a half before you blast off, and you know, you got a chance to come back to Earth. The overall mission, you need like, now figure on 3 years, you know. You're going to be 3 years older when you come back. And you got to bring all your food, you got to sleep. You know, there's no suspended animation. We don't have that yet. So it's going to be a tough 3 years, especially when you get there. And that's the thing. He doesn't have any plans. He thinks maybe other companies or NASA or somebody's going to, you know, show him how to survive for all this time on Mars. And a lot of things to work out before all these things happen. But, the vehicle is being built, let's put it that way. And he plans on eventually sending it to the moon, I guess, first. Plans on doing that. The Starship vehicle. In fact, one guy from Japan already paid. He already put a down payment on this thing. He thinks he's going to bring him and half a dozen people with him for a trip around the moon. You don't want to land there. He just wants to orbit the moon and come back SpaceX Starship. You know, that's a done deal. He's already got like a contract with this guy from Japan, some billionaire. So it's interesting to follow, and that's what we do. Make predictions and see if any of it comes true. This is WS1. WHYY. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Two questions I want you talking about. Number one, how far does a spacecraft have to travel away from Earth before the gravity is considered negligible? And number two, how much in the way of supplies you're going to have to bring with you, size-wise, if it's something like that kind of trip, like food, water, oxygen, is this all going to fit in one spacecraft? So that's a long time that you're going to be, you know, away from an atmosphere and have to basically bring all the stuff with you. They have this all figured out, but they don't, not really.
Well, his original plan was to have this same size vehicle, and eventually he wanted to put like 100 people on there. So he's got plans on being able to put 100 people on, and then the decks below him is going to be filled with cargo. The last I heard, that idea, of course, was scrapped, and now he's down to like 40 people, enough for 40 little rooms. You know, if you ever see the space station with the astronauts sleeping, it's essentially a closet. So, I don't know how big these rooms are going to be, but he wants to put up to 40 people on there and then store everything down below. No, it doesn't sound possible, really, because, you know, he might have enough food and water maybe to get there, you know, 6 to 8 months. I can see them doing that. But what do you do with all this time on Mars? So there's another possible plan that, you know, he's got in the back of his head, to send unmanned vehicles there, similar, you know, more of these Starship vehicles that he wants to build. Have them land, and then you know, have them loaded with supplies, no people. So, I mean, that'll be worked out. My guess is, you know, they said 2024. I think it's 2034. Back to you, John.
Okay. And has anything been given bringing medical personnel with you also? Because if you just put a bunch of people on a spacecraft with a pilot who's going to pilot this thing, what happens if somebody takes a serious injury? Who's going to fix them? I guess it'd be like the space station. You know, there's always at least one doctor on board that space station.
Right. Near, who's going up? She's going up this next flight. 20 at the end of the month, around the 25th of the month. She'll be. She's a doctor. Jessica Near. All these people have medical. A lot of them have medical degrees, and that's only. You know, you have to use sometimes three or six people, usually six people on the space station. And if you have 40 people going to Mars, Joe, I'm sure, you know, you probably have a couple of doctors.
Okay, and the first part of the question, how far is a vehicle going to have to leave Earth's proximity before the gravity has, like, a negligible effect? What would you estimate?
Depends how fast they leave. I mean, you know, you could, you know, I guess they'll load these things up with fuel and get them on quicker. But, you know, if they have anything that, like when they went to the moon, it was a little over 3 days to get to the moon. So I think at day, probably around 2.5, 3, you know, you slow down to maybe a crawl, like 4,000 miles an hour or so. And then eventually you got picked up by the moon. And so it's Mars, I'm sure, will be, you know, the same type of thing. But I don't think they'll get that slow. Well, depends on the size of the vehicle, depends on how much thrust they use. I mean, theoretically, you know, keep loading this thing up with fuel, have fueling vehicles on the way, and just, you know, as long as you have thrust coming out of the back of that thing, really move along to Mars, and that's part of his goal. He wants to make this 8 month journey down to around 40. So, you know, if you do that, you know, Mars will be 40 million miles away at the time. I'm sure they'll probably get down to the slowest speed will probably be around 6,000 or 7,000 miles an hour, and that was probably a little half, you know, past the halfway point, probably 3 million miles away. How many days would that be? That would, based on 6 months, probably 3 months. Wild guess, Joe.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. It'll certainly be an adventure of a lifetime for a bunch of people when they actually step foot on the rocket for the first time, and away they go.
I concur. It's interesting to follow. And all these other countries are interested. I mean, you have Russia who wants to land on it. Now, you know, they all have plans going. We have plans of going back to the moon. And the Mars thing is still not out of the question. I mean, we're going to Mars, but the administration changed everything. My guess is once this administration changes again, they'll be going back to Mars. They'll be doing both, you know, moon and Mars. We'll see. Like you said, you got to fix this whole infrastructure thing first: food, water, doctors, you know, for medical. How are you going to survive on that planet? You know, averaging minus, I think it's the average temperature is like minus 30 or something. You know, that's not good. Let's see, running out of time. Any comments or questions? WS2N. We should turn back over to Dick. K2RIW, WS2N. Waiting on the radio for now, but I'm going to have to say 73. Let me turn it over to Roy. AC2GS, WS Planning, comments, we're running out of time. We've got about a minute left.
Okay, so I'll speak very, very fast. Just want to remind everyone, mailbag questions, comments, statements, refutations, send it to mailbag@ac2gs.com. For links, go to Roy. ac2gs.com. And also, if Bill AC2IS is still listening, I double checked that experiment he was talking about, and unfortunately it appears to be another probabilistic experiment. What happens is it's a beam splitter. There's a certain percentage where the light is reflected, and others, the other percentage that the light is transmitted. And when they're entangled, the entangled photons do the same thing. They're either both reflected or both transmitted. So unfortunately, no mechanics, just more probability. Anyway, this is AC2GS, and thanks to everyone who participated tonight. And I'll be back next week with some new stories, and hopefully I'll figure up a new puzzle.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater.
W2BZ, KC1FAM.
KC1FAM, KD2OZB.
Just call me walking away, KC1FAM. Come on back and I'll get your call soon. Is that
82OGB, old gray beard.
Craig, how you doing? I'm doing well. You sound a little soft. I guess you're on a portable at the house, that's why. But certainly adequate audio. I'm just going to get a glass of water when I head to bed. How you doing?
Doing good. I'm actually in my bed. What are you doing up at this hour?
Yeah, I usually crash, you know, much earlier. But I was doing something on the computer, listening to the net, and I just realized how late it was. I just wasn't tired. So, as soon as I think about it, I'll get tired. You must be comfortable. All right, set the pull covers over your head and go to sleep. That had no audio. Just a lot of static. Try it again.
I said I really would like to participate on the TechNet at some point. I don't really have any questions to think of, though.
Well, in the meantime, you learn from other people's questions, right? Can't go wrong. When they do the ham stuff, it's interesting anyway. And Paul stuff, I like. The other in between, man. That's when I usually get tired. But some of the discussions are pretty good. Learned a lot tonight about the ground full circuit interrupters.
Okay, very good. I'd actually would be better off talking to you from my bed instead of in the basement, especially because I had to deal with a smoke odor earlier from cooking.
Well, some of the cooking smells can be pretty good, but not when they get smoky. Anyway, I'm going to go get that glass of water, and I am getting tired, so I did enjoy chatting with you. So I'm going to let you go to sleep, and I'm going to do the same thing in a couple of minutes.
Alrighty, sounds good. I'll actually be I'll be available to chat all day tomorrow. I've got no work, so feel free to give me a buzz. KC1SAM, 82OGB, we're clear.
Yeah, Casey, when I see him, I'll be clear. I will be around tomorrow. I'll be working on a couple of projects. And actually, I was trying to get Rich because I got an HF antenna for filing, and he's been bugging me to try it. So, but he's not there. So, all right, 73 is Craig. Casey, when I see him, I'll be clear. Catch you again.
tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W.